It has been 7 years since the brutal attack on the Yazidi people by ISIS fighters who entered the Iraqi borders from Syria. Today with us, Perry Ibrahim from the Free Yazidi Foundation. We'll talk about the commemoration event that they will be running as an organization to discuss the issues that are still ongoing and hopefully to propose solutions and to bring justice to the people. Perry, welcome to SBS Kurdish again.
Thank you very much for having me.
First of all, Perry, if you could take us through how the international community have been dealing with these crimes against the Yazidi community by ISIS fighters, and what do you make of the efforts by different organizations as well as countries and governments?
Well, that is a good question. I mean, we've been now 7 years on, and not much has changed for our people. Still, over 200,000 Yazidis are displaced, living in IDP camps in the Kurdish region of Iraq. We see a lot of sympathy for female ISIS members, accomplices, supporters. We do not see that much attention, platform for our survivors. It is unfair because we know that the Yazidis have suffered immensely at the hands of ISIS, whether they were female or male. And I think we should not forget that. We are trying to look for justice, and everywhere we see a lot of perpetrators are indicted for terrorism, which is a very easy way. Traveling to Syria, etc., can already show your intentions. But we want perpetrators to be indicted for the crimes that they actually committed against our people. Let's talk about the genocide crimes. Let's talk about genocide, crimes against humanity, rape, murder, human trafficking, slavery. These are all crimes in itself. And our people have suffered these horrible crimes. Perpetrators should be indicted for those crimes, be sentenced for these actions, and not only for terrorism. Because when we charge perpetrators for terrorism, we forget what the real crimes were that were happening on the ground in Iraq and Syria from 2014 onward against our people. And because of that, we try to push international community to make sure that they really investigate what did their own citizens do. We try to push the Iraqis and the Kurdish government to ensure that the ISIS members that are now in their jails are being fully investigated and are indicted for the crimes that they committed against the Yazidis, and that the Yazidis are not forgotten. There's a lot still to do, from humanitarian aid to economic welfare and ensuring a sustainable future for the Yazidi community.
As you mentioned, many members of the Yazidi community are still in IDP camps and have not been able to go back to their towns and villages. From your experience and from what you are aware of, what are the efforts of resettling these people back into their villages and towns?
It is very difficult to ensure that all Yazidis go back to their areas of origin. The problem lies not in only one thing. There's a couple of aspects that prevent our people from going back. We try to make sure that the international community understands that it is very important that we have a voluntary and safe and dignified way to return the Yazidis back to their areas of origin. We're talking about issues like very basic issues, infrastructure, like water, electricity, housing. The basic needs of our people are not even met. The rebuilding has gone very slow. This is why over 200,000 Yazidis are still displaced. When we look at the safety and security, there are still many days that Turkey is attacking the area for reasons that they have, but this endangers ethnic and religious minorities in the region, specifically Yazidis in Sinjar. Safety and security, infrastructure, and a future for our own people. We have to think that the economics were never good in Sinjar before the Islamic State. We need to ensure that if our people go back, that they have a way to provide for themselves. And I think that we are far off of making sure that these kind of things are there. Now it's been 7 years, and as I said, our people are still displaced. The life in camps is not easy, and it is not what our people want. Just to talk about, like, 133 families just recently in June 2021 lost all their belongings and their tent in a massive fire. This is what daily life looks like in the camps. It is not fully safe. Fires break out because of electricity wiring, and it's killing our people. It is endangering our people. So it is not what our people want. They don't want to live for the rest of their lives in IDP camps, internally displaced people camps, living in tents. They do want to go back home, but they cannot go back home because it's not safe and because there haven't been real efforts to hear the voices of our people, to ensure that our people have a say in whatever happens in Sinjar. And if you cannot even provide the basics, basic protection, basic housing, infrastructure, then people will remain in IDP camps and not go back. The basic needs first must be met.
If we talk about the number of the Yazidi women and children who are missing to date, has that number been reduced at all? If from time to time we hear in the media, and especially local media, that they've been rescued, they've been taken out of, we know that as has been reported, many Yazidi girls and women are still in places like Al-Hol camp in Syria. Do we have an estimate of how many are still missing?
So we have a number from May 2021 that the missing Yazidis are around 2,868. We say that it's mostly women and children. This number changes day by day. Over the last week or so, we've seen some Yazidis escape out of captivity, rescued out of captivity. This is good news. This means that we can find our loved ones. Many of the Yazidi community have lost family members, so did I. And it is important that we are not silenced, that we do not forget them. If we stop making sure that people understand that they are still missing, if we stop this effort, they will be forgotten and they do not have a voice in captivity. So it is really important that Yazidi organizations, the international community, keep talking, keep raising awareness of bring our women and girls back, the 2,868 Yazidi women and children. How is it possible that we live in the 21st century and we just accept that these things happen? If it was in the US or in Australia, can you imagine? When one child is missing, everyone gets an alert to keep your eyes open and find this little girl or boy. Why can we accept that just because it's in Iraq, that 2,868 people are missing and they just vanished? Should we not make a real effort to try to find them? We think that the coalition, the global coalition that defeated Daesh together with the Iraqi and the Kurdish government can really, really make steps forward with the autonomous administration of Northeast Syria, Interpol, UNITAD, UNAMI, everyone, all these stakeholders try to craft a plan and try to locate the Yazidis that are abducted because we know there are many still alive. Some have killed themselves. Some commit suicide in captivity, but we know that some are still alive. And we need to make a real effort to try to locate where they are. And then the second step is tell them that they are welcome, that there are organizations that will try to help them, even if they have children born from rape. The Free Yazidi Foundation will never close its door for any Yazidi woman, no matter whether she has a child born from rape or not. Our doors are open and we will assist wherever is needed.
That was going to be my next question. What are your opinions of those community or cultural issues that are reported from time to time that some of these women could be scared? Some of them are scared of rejection by their families or community if they're bearing, you know, an ISIS child, for example, or are still scared of ISIS members that they may well be still in control of their lives.
Yes, I'm definitely sure that many Islamic State fighters, even female, they are holding Yazidis as slaves, putting fear in their mind that the Yazidi community will not accept them. It is true that the Yazidi community has been very against accepting the children that were born from these rapes. They made it very clear that they accept the women back and the Yazidi children, but they do not accept the children that were fathered by an ISIS member. I think it is very unfair to put a Yazidi woman in this position. We need to understand that the only loving thing in captivity was probably this child that was born from rape. Who are we to decide what this woman can and cannot do? We need to accept her own wishes. We need to respect her as a woman, and we need to respect that she has rights, and we need to acknowledge those rights. We need to understand that whatever she wants, we need to listen. We need to support her in her decision. We should not make her feel alienated. And so it is very important that we bring this message out, that we bring out the message that you are accepted by some, even if it's not the whole community. It is better for you to come back and let's try to figure out how we can start a new life for you. Instead of you staying in captivity, being treated as a slave, where you have no rights at all. On one hand, I can understand the Yazidi community because they've been targeted in such a way that it's unimaginable to understand the crimes that happened. So my community, in one way, is in a very difficult position because now they're going to accept the children that were fathered by an ISIS member. How will this child turn out? They are afraid of that. Aside from that, we also have that in Iraq, the child is seen as Muslim, although the mother is Yazidi. But aside from that, I think the international community needs to be very fair against these women and girls. They need to make sure that they can be resettled elsewhere. A life in Iraq for these women and girls is not possible. They will forever be looked at as a woman with a child born from rape from the Islamic State. The child will always be seen as a child with blood from an Islamic State fighter. It is unfair to the woman, the Yazidi woman, and it is unfair to the child to let them live in Iraq. You do not want to put people in a situation like that forever. It's a sort of sentencing. You should give them the opportunity to start a better life somewhere else where they will not be judged every single day. And I think the international community owes that to these women and girls who did not go to the Islamic State by themselves. They were kidnapped. We need to understand this and give them a second chance.
What are organizations such as the Free Yazidi Foundation and others are doing about this very complex situation? Has there been any work to try and work out these issues on the ground and from the grassroots?
So the Free Yazidi Foundation has done already a bit of work with the Yazidi women and also Yazidi women who have children born from rape. As I said, our doors are open no matter what. So this is very important. And as more women and girls hear this, they see an opportunity to come and talk to us. We provide education classes. We provide a safe place where the women can come and be educated and trained, where they can get trauma treatment. We treat the most severe cases and other cases with international clinical psychologists and Yazidi women who have been trained in psychological first aid. And we're looking into what are the next steps. We've made sure that some of the women are able to be relocated somewhere else in a different country or somewhere in Erbil or elsewhere while they are waiting for acceptance by a different country. Working together with other organizations is hugely important. But still, as I said, Yazidi civil society organizations like Free Yazidi Foundation that are run by women, for women, it is important that they are supported because we know the issues in the community and we will not shy away to discuss them and to tackle them. It is difficult to discuss the issue of children born from rape with religious leaders. I know a lot of UN bodies have tried to do that and it is a no. They will not accept the children back that are children fathered by the Islamic State. But the international community can do so much more to support civil society organizations to ensure that there is information spreading, good information, And I think that education is what our community also needs as we go through the aftermath of the genocide. It is also to be understood that our whole community is traumatized. We need a lot of education. We need a lot of psychological treatment for our people. And then we can talk about next steps and make sure that our people can accept things that are different than what they are used to. But we need a lot of support from the international community, because alone the civil society organizations will not be able to do those kind of things.
Has there been any positive outcome from the international community or from the local governments, be it the Iraqi government or the Kurdistan regional government, any positive steps towards reaching some sort of solution for the situation of the Yazidi community there?
Well, you know, in March 2021, the Iraqi parliament passed the Yazidi Survivors Law. This is a way to provide Yazidi survivors with a package of services and financial reparations. And this is very important for our women and girls, but also for women and girls from the Christian, Turkmen, and Shaba communities, and just in general, survivors of mass executions. It's about a monthly salary, a plot of land, housing, support to re-enter school, and access to psychological and other health services. And this is very, very important, because at this moment, the Yazidi women and girls, they don't have anything, any support like this, other than civil society organizations providing them with opportunities for education and those kind of things, or giving them psychological treatment. But we all know that much, much more is needed. I mean, we remain skeptical because the implementation of this past law has still not begun. There are a lot of bureaucratical hurdles that must be overcome. There needs to be accurate communication with our survivors so that survivors understand and know what they can expect, and we should not make any false promises. The need for proper implementation is very high if we want to ensure that these survivors have a chance to come back into the society, ensure that they are able to get the second chance that we want to offer them. The Iraqi government needs to stand firm and start implementation, because these women and girls, or these survivors, are waiting every day. They know something has been passed. What it all is, they don't know. They don't have the ins and outs. I know Free Yazidi Foundation, together with other organizations, UN, IOM, has been able to provide information on what the law exactly means, on what the women and girls can expect from this law and the implementation of it. And this is very important for all of them.
Now let's talk about the events that you will be running on the 2nd and 3rd of August. What are your thoughts in putting this event together? If you could just tell us a little bit of the details and what you hope to achieve as a result.
So every year we do a commemoration to think about what happened in August 2014, to understand what the international community has done for our people and what can be done better. We reflect on everything, and this time after 7 years, I think it's hugely important for our people to understand who are the allies of the Yazidi community, who are those Yazidis that have something to say today about what happened to our people and how the future will look like. I think our people need a lot of information, because we know that things are happening, but we don't always know what exactly is happening. Say, for example, the cases in Germany. I think a lot of our people don't even know the specific things in the cases itself. And as I said before, the Yazidi Survivors Law. A lot of Yazidi survivors did not understand what the Yazidi Survivors Law meant and why it was passed, and what it means after it is passed. So we try to, on the 2nd and the 3rd of August, try to ensure that there is information from different governments, information from different stakeholders, to come and tell the Yazidi community what they've been doing, what they see the future of Yazidis looks like in Iraq, how they are trying to help the Yazidi community to recover and pick up the shattered pieces, to begin a new life and to go back home. And I think that is hugely important for our community and to ensure that nobody forgets what happened on the 3rd of August, the start of a genocide against an ethnic religious minority in Iraq. I think we should never forget these kind of attacks on people, because even to this day, we are talking about more genocides that are happening. I'm talking about the UN Convention to prevent genocide and punish the crime of genocide. Now, after 7 years, a couple of countries have finally recognized the genocide against the Yazidis. But this means that you were unable to prevent a genocide when it first started. So there is a problem here. Why are we unable to prevent a genocide? Why do we have to wait 7 years later, or even more for some people, to then acknowledge that the crime that occurred to you was a genocide? It is important that we acknowledge that something is going wrong, even though we all signed the treaty to prevent and punish genocide. We need to understand that there is much, much more to do for the international community. As we are speaking, there are genocides ongoing, and there's still much more to do to ensure that people do not suffer the way the Yazidi people suffered, that women do not suffer like the way the Yazidi women suffered. And I think and I hope that out of these commemorations that we do every single year, whether it's lighting up a candle, whether it's talking about these issues, I hope that it brings some sort of education and information to our own community, but also to the international community to understand that these things should never, ever happen again.
Hari Ibrahim, founder of Free Yazidi Foundation, we thank you very much for your time and we wish you all the very best.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me here.